Does so, he think that you're his mummy, or yeah. are you more like a business partner? Like, what is the arrangement between you?
Business partner.
You know, some of them, they are just like, they love their owners, and some they're just tolerating.
This week on Walking the Dog, I travel to West Yorkshire to take Raymond for a walk with comedian, actor, writer, and star of the utterly brilliant Meet the Richardsons, Lucy Beaumont. Lucy is so ready to bring a dog into her household. I can just feel it. And to be fair, Raymond really gave it the big sell. The guy threw everything at it. We took a stroll in some picturesque woods in Lucy's neighbourhood and chatted about Lucy's childhood, growing up with a single mum, how she broke into acting and stand-up comedy, and being set up with her husband, comedian John Richardson, by their mutual friend Roisin Conaty. We also talked about raising her daughter, Elsie, and her new book about parenting, which is out this week, Drinking Custard, Diary of a Confused Mum, which is a very funny, honest look at the ups and downs of parenting, and I absolutely loved it. Lucy's got this very gentle, calm energy. She's one of those people you can't ever imagine being angry at. Stop laughing, John Richardson. She's also utterly hilarious. So basically, Raymond and I are planning on moving in with her. So if you could maybe let John know if you run into him. I loved my walk with Lucy, and I hope you do too. Do check out her brilliant book, Drinking Custard, Diary of a Confused Mum. And please remember to rate, review and subscribe. I'll shut up now and hand over to the woman herself. Here's Lucy and Raymond.
Now, what do I need? I'll take Raymond's treats. I've got these, Lucy. Look at his expectant face. That's John I'm talking about. Right, we've got everything.
Oh, look at his little eyes.
I've got the poo bags.
Does it look a bit like him?
Kettle. A Nation Awaits.
He reminds me of somebody. I can't. It'll come to me.
I'm going to leave in case it's me.
John, can I ask, what do you think of my dog?
I love your dog. Concerned we're going to have one similar in about 2 or 3 days.
What do you like him?
Sort of the dog is really badly behaved. Because we've had a lot of arguments about getting a dog, and I want one, but not yet.
He's one of them who wants to wait till the right time.
Oh, don't you hate that?
Well, there's never going to be a right time.
Exactly, Lucy. You tell him.
Very long hair, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like human long hair.
Yeah.
We have an issue with plug blockages as it is.
It's got natural ombre. Ooh.
Do you look at that, John, and think the practical issues of that hair is worrying me?
It's not so much that. I think it's almost too docile a dog. I think you'd forget it was there.
I see. This is the problem. He looks at everything and worries about the practicality of it. That's the thing. Everything is a burden in life.
Well, this is true, isn't it?
You haven't seen him in action yet.
Right. Could he do something? Go on then, Raymond.
Can he do something? Okay.
Show me your exuberance.
Right, show John. Ray, come on. Come on. See?
Okay.
Can you see some exuberance? You see, what I find is if you want the exuberance, you give it to him and then he gives it back.
I see. So
if you'd have gone, come on, show us how you do it.
We can't have a dog that's a mirror. Ooh. I need a dog.
Goodbye.
Different again.
Good luck on your walk.
Bye, John.
Stay safe.
Oh, we will.
Look out for this one.
Come on, Lucy. Come on, Raymond. We're going out with Lucy.
It's doggy heaven in the woods.
Shall I shut the door, Lucy?
Oh, yeah, please.
Bye, John.
I can take you to Ecclesaw Woods. It's about a 20-minute walk to the woods. And then it's about a 25-minute walk back again.
Lovely.
Is that about right?
That sounds great. Oh, Raymond, who's that dog? That's your neighbour's dog, Lucy, isn't it?
Yeah, two of them, yeah. Gosh, it's a lovely day. So have you come up from London? Is that where you are? Thank you for coming all this way.
Such a treat, and it's so beautiful here.
Yeah, it's...
This is stunning, isn't it?
Whereabouts are you in London?
So I'm in North London.
Oh, yeah.
Such a cliche. But in fairness to me, Lucy, I did grow up there.
Whereabouts?
So I grew up in Highgate.
Oh, yeah, that's where I know. My dad grew up Muswell Hill. And then my nana moved to Southgate, you know, later life, and I lived at East Finchley for 8 years.
Oh, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry, Raymond's stopping, Lucy. He does this.
Oh.
He likes that lamppost. He's got very good energy for this place. I can tell he's happy here.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, he does.
Everyone's got a dog around here.
Really?
Everybody. Yeah, you saw the dog in the window. Look, it's like.
That was really sweet.
Did you see that?
There was a man going past, and it was, you know, the classic. I think it was a Border Terrier with the head sticking out of the window.
Yeah.
I love that sight. It's a very British sight, that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's joyful, isn't it? When they've got their ears flapping. Eddie Izzard used to have a sketch about, I think he had a dog in a car or a dog in a speedboat with its ears flapping in the wind. Lovely, yeah.
Well, I'm going to introduce you now. I'm so thrilled to be here. It's a beautiful sunny day, and I've just turned up at the home of someone I adore and think is so incredibly funny and talented. And I've just read her brilliant book, which we're going to be talking about. I'm with the very wonderful Lucy Beaumont, and we're in West Yorkshire. Is that good enough? Is that a good enough description?
Yeah, definitely.
So.
Yeah.
And I just kicked the bin. But that's not because I don't like it, because it's gorgeous around here.
Yeah, it is. It's lovely. We've just moved here in January, and we're really happy. Yeah, it's quiet and leafy, and yeah, it's lovely. And we're still just across here. We're still close to family and friends, and feel northern, you know. But yeah, it's fab. It's fab. Me and John didn't grow up, you know, we're from single parents, and we both had quite humble beginnings, really. So I think we both don't take it for granted, really, that we managed to live, you know, live somewhere, yeah, safe. And because a lot of people don't necessarily have that luxury, do they, to live somewhere they really like and feel comfortable in. So yeah, it's we're doing all right. Can't complain, really. I mean, I can.
And we should say, you refer to John, and that's of course your husband, John Richardson. And we're going to talk as well about your brilliant show, Meet the Richardsons, which I'm absolutely addicted to.
Oh, do you like it?
Oh, so much.
Oh, good.
We'll talk about that and your book. But I wanted to get, we should talk about dogs.
Yeah.
So I'm here today, I've brought my dog Raymond with me, and I sort of feel it's sort of a test run, really, because you don't have a dog, but I'm already getting the impression that you're quite keen on dogs.
Yeah, I really, I've never had a dog. I've always wanted one as a kid, and I've never had one, and I've never really spent time with dogs. I think, if I'm honest, I want a baby. I want a fairy baby that won't ever grow up and answer back. I just want something to adorn it. To be, you know, when they're excited when you get in, and a travel companion.
Isn't that a partner?
Oh, yeah. Oh, do you think I want a new husband? Oh, maybe you're right. Yeah, and I do like names like Colin, Derek, Dave.
Do you think, we introduced him to John earlier briefly, didn't we, your other half? And I couldn't decide, I think John liked him. Although I think John maybe felt, and I may be wrong here, Lucy, but I feel he's quite a pragmatic, practical man. Mm. And he almost looked at Raymond and thought, but you don't quite fit the idea of what the dog should be.
No, I thought that as well. He does. I don't think he likes attractive-looking dogs.
Why not?
I don't know. I think he's insecure. I don't know what it is. He wants one that looks a bit mangy. He wants to rescue one. He wants that messiah complex.
So I want to talk about, so we're in this beautiful area of West Yorkshire, which is so leafy, and you moved here, you and John, partly for sort of family reasons, really, didn't you?
Yeah. John really didn't want to bring our daughter up in London. What we wanted her to have a Yorkshire accent, and now because she watches a lot of Netflix, it's like a Yorkshire American accent. So she'll literally say, "Here, Mum, shall we put the trash out?" Like that. And there's these little words that's like we've took her to LA a lot. You know, she says like, "Oh, that's sassy," and it's just all come from Netflix. So, but yeah, we're near family, and we're both Northern, and yeah, it felt the right thing to do. I mean, I want to be back in London, really, but I do like being able to be in people's lives more. I don't know. I mean, what do you want? Nice coffee or to see your granddad more? It's hard to decide, isn't it?
It's nice for you to have a sort of support network not that far away, isn't it, as well?
Oh, totally, yeah. It means you can work more, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, hopefully she'll have the best of both worlds.
Cause yeah.
We spend a lot of time in different places. She's used to travelling. You know, we're always all over the place in Airbnbs. My mum said, you don't really need your own house because you just go in Airbnbs, you know.
Oh,
we
yes.
could actually just go from one to another.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's lovely, and I mean, we live in a nice area, but you know, we've seen a big difference in the north. You know, some areas really sort of changing and growing and becoming really exciting, and then other places, you know, really declining. Mm. You know, there's still a lot of work to be done in the north, I think, compared to the south.
Well, I know this is a nice area because the bins are absolutely immaculate.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all equidistant, equally equidistant.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's this street in particular, everyone's retired, so there's a keeping up with the Joneses.
Do you know?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's the etiquette, isn't it? You're meant to put the handles out front.
I suspect there's a man, Lucy, who lives here, who comes out and he goes, and he just moves it half an inch.
Yes, John.
I want to go back to your childhood. You were actually born in Cornwall, technically, weren't you?
Yeah, just for the day. Well, the legend goes that she went to doctors and said, my mum said, you know, that her parents wanted to take her on a caravan holiday. And he said, well, it's fine because you've got 6 weeks till you give birth. And he said, actually, it'd be good for you, a bit of sun. And my mum thinks, because she was like in the sun a lot, that it brought on, labour. So she had me 6 weeks early, so that's why. And so they weren't prepared, so they didn't have anything.
Oh.
And that's why when I mean, it's mad what you can get away with in the 80s, but they didn't have anything to take me home in for the car journey back up to Hull.
Because they were on this camping holiday.
Yeah, so my granny went in and... she went in a fruit and veg shop and got a wooden box that was apparently in the shape of a cradle that said thank goodness for fresh eggs on it. And I came home in that, in the car. That's what they put me in.
And your parents at that point, they were together, weren't they? And then they split up. Were you about two or something?
Yeah, yeah. It was just one of them things. They've got strengths in other areas.
What did they do, your parents?
Oh, well, my mum at that time worked, she did set design for, well, she met my dad went to art college in Hull. He's from Muswell Hill in North London. And my mum worked at the art supply shop in Hull, and she sort of flirted with him when he went in to get his equipment. And that was that. And then I think he got her a job in TV down south, so she did set design. So she worked on like a, you know, Saturday Superstar and Going Live and stuff like that. And I think she helped make the set for Only Fools and Horses. And
really?
Yeah, my dad worked in post-production, so he did a lot of the title sequences and things. Yeah, so when it was all done by spray, you know, the graphics were all sort of done by hand back then.
Hello. Oh, Lucy, look, Ray's met a friend.
Oh.
Little Westie.
Yeah.
What's yours called?
Barney.
Oh, Barney, this is Raymond.
Oh, hello. Oh, Raymond, that's a good name. Who's him? Ah. What is he?
Good question. He's a Shih Tzu, actually, but he's just a small one.
That's what threw me. Roll a coat.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Really nice to meet you. Bye bye.
Oh, that's so,
so when you were growing up with your mum, who was a single parent, you were in, this was in Hull, right?
Yeah.
And tell me about your childhood with your mum. You didn't have pets, did you? What sort of a home was
we
it?
We had a hamster called Houdini that used to escape. And on a night, it used to run about. And one night, my mum was watching X-Files and it ran along the back of the sofa. And my mum thought it was an alien and she hit it and it died instantly on the spot.
Oh, which no, is poor Houdini.
Awful. And we had a cat, and when we moved, my mum let it out too early and it ran away and we never saw it again.
So you weren't really a sort of a pet family, what I call a kind of dog family?
Oh, no.
And, no. But you grew up... Did your grandparents help with bringing you up?
Yeah. My mum's life was. I mean, it settled down, but my mum was like, I mean, really, because she was young. Look, I can so much more appreciate stuff because she had me when I was 21, and she was a young 21 as well. You know, really, she still did want to go out in her 30s, and she's really just a really social person. So, I had great influences. Really, that was. With my mum, it was always a bit hectic and spontaneous and fun. And then with my granddad and granny, that was because they were older, you know, and they retired early, you know. So that was very traditional and calm and. So I've had the best of both worlds. I had a lot of people who used to look after me because my mum had to work, you know, a lot of really... amazing people, really, who were all really funny. Barbara, a lady who lived around the corner, used to look after me, and again, she's, you know, older, so I can tell people when they've been brought up by grandparents. In the past, I've been able to say, "Were you? You just? I don't know. There's like a, I don't know. There's a, I can't put my finger on. Like not like a wisdom's maybe. There's just something a little bit old fashioned." Sometimes, you know what I mean? Like
I call it Nana's kids, and it's these kids raised by like an older generation. Do you think it's a kind of formality and
or like a calmness? Because I think that generation, they sort of bring you up very different. They don't sweat the small stuff as much, you know. And they're very. I think it's different for everyone, but definitely there is.
So what did that mean for you as a kid? What sort of a, looking it back at yourself now, that especially now you've got a daughter yourself, how would you describe yourself as a kid?
As a kid, well, I grew up quite quickly really, because my mum got diagnosed with Asperger's just last year, as a lot of older women did, because I think they'd had time to think and reflect and so we didn't know that then, but sometimes we were more like sisters, and my mum sort of sometimes had to sort of let me look after her, really. She slipped all her discs in her back when I was in primary school and couldn't walk for a year, so I was a bit like a carer, really, for a few years. But we've got a great relationship, because it's when you're in a single parent family, you sometimes play all the roles. It's not like those other roles go.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you're playing siblings and father figures and mother, and it all swaps around. And I think emotionally, sometimes you might have to grow up. You know, especially like if they're going, you know, they go into relationships and they break up, and actually you're the one there to pick up the pieces in a way.
Yeah.
So I was emotionally very, very very mature from such a young age.
Were you funny as a kid? I'm always interested in at what point people who went on to be funny for a living understood that they had, that was currency and that they had funny bones.
With me, I don't always want to be funny. Sometimes I like to be serious, you know, but then I find the more I try to be serious, the more the more I end up doing some stupid, you know, I can't help it. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. I'd like to be, you see, I don't know how John's ended up really funny, but also with really great common sense, and I think you twat, you know, how did you end up? Because I just can't help but being a clown. I just end up getting myself into ridiculous situations, you know. The comedy tends to find me. The other day, it's the timing of these things. My mum was staying with us and he'd been doing a documentary called Trash Monsters, and so he was quite worthy telling us how we shouldn't waste food and, you know, this, and he had all these facts and figures. And with that, the doorbell went, and it was our supermarket delivery. And I do know how I'd done it. I meant to order one lettuce, but I'd put in two ones, and I'd ordered 11 lettuces. And me and my mum had to try and hide them round the house, so he didn't know. And she put one in the blooming washing machine. And then he went to do a wash. And he went mad at me, and then the next week I did it again. I forgot to change the order. We had 22 lettuces in 2 weeks.
When you were a kid, you know, when you do something funny and you're aware of a room laughing, you're aware of everyone going, oh, that, you know, you feel that sense of, it's nice to get that applause and that sense of, oh, people like me when I make them laugh. This is a nice atmosphere in the room, you know. Were you cracking jokes, or was it, as you say, just you'd do something and were surprised that people would find you funny?
Yeah, I always did. I always was a bit of a class clown in secondary school. And then I think, like a lot of comedians, you find that it's actually can be a bit of security, because if you can make someone laugh, they're not going to beat you up. Do you know? So it did develop during high school. It wasn't a rough school, but it was a school that was was quite felt very northern. Like, you were judged on how hard you were or how good you were at rugby, and nothing else. You know, no room for creativity. I did learn it then. And then I remember my uncle saying to me, me and my mum was having a tricky time just because I was a teenager. And he said, if you make a laugh, you'll get away with anything. I think that's when I started testing it out more. But we've always been able to, we've had a lot of sort of ups and downs, my mum. You know, life's been quite hard in some respects. Mm. So she's hilarious, and we've always used humour. The whole family have. We're one of them families where we can lean to quite dark humour in quite pressured situations.
It's so true. I have a really similar, it sounds like we're quite similar in some ways, because my mum, again, single parent, and even though my sister was around, well, then she was, it was a similar thing in that she was an actor. I suppose what I'm saying is, I understand there's a real closeness that you get that I don't think you possibly do with the two parent structure, do you, in the quite the same way?
No, I mean, yeah, definitely. I think, especially if you're brought up to be expressive, like to discuss your emotions, even if it's...
Lucy Dog Waste, look. I just say, what an absolutely stunning dog waste.
Really?
Contraption.
Do you know, I've never thought of it like that. What is it that makes it stunning? It's quite, is it like that industrial chic?
I love it.
Do you want me to try and get you it? Do you want, I mean, we could.
I mean, maybe empty it first, Lucy.
I think, you know.
Right. Hello.
If I got in touch with the local church committee or something.
Let's let Raymond down.
He said good day.
Might be an Australian in our midst.
Everyone's very friendly.
So go on. We were talking about your childhood, and I get the sense as a kid, though, you know, you've talked about this, and John's referred to it, and you mention it in your book as well, which I like. But you, there's a nice phrase you use. You say, "I've seen a few sunsets, and I've drunk some hard liquor," and I get the sense you had quite, you did some partying and had fun in your youth,
oh
didn't you?
Oh my God, certainly. That's why I'm so sensible now, because I worried that I'd overdone it. But yeah, I was a big raver. Massive raver. I never really liked drink, so I was really glad that there was drugs, really, you know, that you didn't have to, I just had a great time, really, all through my 20s. I don't regret anything. I just lived in the moment and had really good friends and just listened to really good music and danced a lot and had fun. So I just, but now I'm like into having like carrot and orange juice in the morning and getting like,
I'm waiting for Raymond. I'm so sorry, I might have to pick him up. He's so small.
Is he intelligent?
No.
Oh, is he not? Oh.
I wondered if he was like absorbing it.
Does he think that you're his mummy, or are you more like a business partner? Like, what is the arrangement between you?
Business partner.
You know, some of them, they are just like, they love their owners, and some they're just tolerating.
I want him to think that the world would be awful without me, because then he'll stay with me.
Oh, he's not going to, but they're loyal, aren't they, dogs? They're not like cats.
That's why I prefer them. You see, do you have a cat? You don't have a cat at the moment.
I just had that cat that disappeared. But I did look. Oh, no, I did. I did have. That's awful of me. I did have another little cat with a previous relationship and then left. And that was a lovely cat. But I had the trauma, you see. And this is what I'm worried about with dogs, because when we went to get the kitten from a litter, it made such horrendous crying noises when we took it away from its mother that I had no idea about. I didn't even think.
Yeah.
It's made me very worried about taking a puppy away from its mother. And I know that they almost forget, don't they? And they do settle, but just the thought of that I find quite hard.
Yes, that can be tricky. But then I just think, that's why I spoil him.
And they do forget. And they get rejected as well sometimes by the mother anyway, don't they?
She couldn't have given him what I have.
Oh, gosh, no, of course not. You know.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So, and throughout this time, Lucy, did you feel throughout school and university, was that the goal always? I want to perform.
Yeah. I did a play in year six at primary school, and I got the bug, and I really wanted to be an actor, really. And I just, this whole comedy thing's just been a long-winded way of ending up being an actor, but I've never quite made it as an actor. I think I'll constantly still try, but I don't know. I don't think I'm very good at acting, because because my mum's always said I am, but then I think what I've realised is one, my mum's got Asperger's, and B, it's your mother. So I've done some great comedy plays. But I don't think I've ever been good enough to sort of make it big, you know, on TV in acting. Because I've had the auditions, and because I can only do this Hull accent, you see, and I can only do a West Hull accent. I can't even do an East Hull accent. And they always ask for like, I went up for an in, uh, I mean, casting with a film with Johnny Depp. And they were so sure. When I walked in, they said, "We honestly think you're right for this." And then they said, "Can you do just sort of a generic sort of London accent?" And I tried, and I sounded like blooming Mary Poppins. What's his name?
Go on, I want to hear your London accent.
You see, I'm already getting nervous.
Why didn't you just say, "Raymond, can you come here, please, immediately?"
"Raymond, can you come here immediately?"
Oh, I love that. I quite like it.
I know. Well, and then they said, "Could you do just sort of, don't worry about being London." And their faces, because I could tell in the room, they were so animated when I walked in, and their faces sort of changed. And then they said, "Could you just do like, just like, not Northern, just like maybe like Midlands, like just so there's not really a hint of dialect." And I was like, "Do you, it, like, quite middle class?" Or, and they were like, "Well, try it." So I tried to talk like this, and I was going, like, "Oh, is this okay if I talk like this?" And they were like, "Oh, that's unusual. Where is that?" And I was like, I don't know, like Cheltenham. I just didn't know. And then we narrowed it down to West Hull, and then I didn't get the role. So it's, and someone once said, "You're never going to be Juliet in the IRC." And it really made me think, maybe they're right, that I'm not ever going to get to do Shakespeare.
I think that's an interesting point you said there. In some ways, do you think you sort of decided to start doing stand-up almost to sort of conquer your nerves, I suppose, with performing in a way, with acting? Or to get stage time? Was it partly to do with that?
It was just simply for money. It was because what I think I am and what I want to be is a regional comedy stage actress. I'm most happy being on stage in a comedy play. That's really what I want to do, and that's what I did do, because I think stage acting is a bit different from telly acting. Although, you know, I'm doing a lot of telly acting in Meet the Richardsons, playing myself, but I had a few years of, I loved it. I went from one regional theatre to another, and I thought, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. You're not paid great, but it would be enough if you lived in the north, you know. And then the recession hit, and it just crushed regional theatre. And when it started back up again, they only wanted like soap actors and people with profile. I couldn't even get, you know, seen, you know, for stuff. And I think now I've realised how hard that was, because I was still young. Yeah. I think I didn't think of it as like, "Oh, my industry's collapsed," because I was still so young. But now I do realise that actually that, you know. So I tried to do other jobs. I've done every job under the sun. The nearest thing I've been happy is early years, you know, working in primary schools. I enjoyed that, but I couldn't have done that as a career. I just ain't got it in me. I needed to do something performing.
You just thought, "Oh, I'll give this a go." You know, a lot of people, they're held back by.
Yeah. I think it was the environment I was in. I was in Hull, and I was going out with someone in a band, and him and his friends and our friends were hilarious, really funny people, amazing banter. And I was practicing without knowing it, but I would something funny would happen to me, and then I would tell lots of different people. And I was sort of making material. And each time I told a new person, I'd sort of adjust the timing or the way I would tell it. So by the end, every week I'd have, you know, three or four hilarious stories. And then I was sort of already doing it, you know, just with mates. But it was definitely the people I was around at the time helped to create a persona that I did on stage. And when I started out, I was so alternative. I used to have this, well, it was because he used to drive me, but I used to have this guy, and he was, without sounding off, he was very overweight, and he was very tall, he was like 6 foot, And he used, you know, he didn't have very good social skills. That's awful in case he's listening, but
sorry,
he used to drive.
He sounds quite a guy, actually.
Yeah, we used to drive me to gigs, but what he used to do was just stand on stage with me next to me. And he had a little handbag as well, because I had a little handbag. And he would not do anything. He would just be there. But then he was saying, like, if we make it big, that he wanted to split the money half. I thought it's getting a bit awkward now, because he didn't actually do anything, you know. I'd pay him for his travel and stuff, but I definitely had a persona. You know, I used to do this persona of like a sort of like one of the girls that I'd maybe worked in a factory with, where they're like naive and a little bit awestruck about everything, and so it helped like to create like a material that was quite surreal and a little bit skewered. And
then you came on my radar. I guess after you won, So You Think You're Funny, you were involved in that, and I just remember suddenly everyone was talking about you, and at the Edinburgh Festival there was just, your name was everywhere, and that was sort of when you broke through, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, broke through and did what I think was a really good first Edinburgh show, and then slightly lost my way a bit, but more just because I met John, I was starting a family, sort of. Yeah, and it was sort of becoming quite comfortable, really, because the drive for me in the beginning was just to try and make money, because I just was penniless. I had nothing. You know, I moved down to London just literally with a few bin liners and worked in the daytime and gigged every night. And so I really needed that BBC New Comedy Award I won, because, you see, what's changed so much is back then, I mean, that was like 2012, it was still so sexist, like unbelievably sexist. I couldn't get gigs because they didn't, you know, whatever they say now, a lot of promoters, they don't like female comics. They can pretend they do, but they don't, they didn't, they got into promoting because they wanted to hang around with funny men. That's why a promoter becomes, they didn't do it because they wanted to, you know, put the spotlight on minorities in, you know, they didn't. They wanted to hang around with men that looked and sounded like a funnier version of them.
Do you think there's an element of having to prove yourself as a woman on stage?
Oh, God, yeah. And sometimes more to other women. Other women are the, you know, can be the... I find men laugh more at my stuff than women. To be honest, oh no, it's totally like that. I mean, I've started to be more myself when I do stand up now. I'm just starting to get back into it because I want to tour again, really, next year. But when I started, they used to laugh at me sometimes backstage at gigs, because I used to come in and take all my makeup off and put my hair back and put like a silly coat on. I just didn't want like anyone to like be thinking, do I want to fuck her or not, you know, because that's sort of, when a female comedian comes on stage, people, because every woman is a sexual, you know, either do I want to sleep with her or don't I, you know, and the women are, does my husband want to sleep with her, or don't, you know, it's mad. So I just didn't want to, and I think people warmed to me because I think I looked a bit more vulnerable. And I still get nervous now on stage. You know, that's why I always have to have the mic on a stand, because I can't. I mean, I was so nervous back then. Like, my knees would wobble. I could hear people go, "Oh, bless her." You know, I've never. It's the adrenaline. Like, just like I still find it so nerve-wracking. But I just knew I had to try it. You know, and it doesn't. Being on stage doing stand-up still doesn't come easy to me, you know. Every time I feel like I'm putting myself in the firing line. The comedy does, you know. But actually being that exposed is still, you know, hard. I don't know why I put myself through it, but when it goes well, it's the greatest feeling in the world, you know. When everyone is, you know, laughing, you know, really laughing.
I wanted to talk about your book, which I loved, and to bring us up to date with the book, which starts, well, it starts when you meet John, doesn't it? So
yeah,
let's talk a bit about that. You and John met through Roisin Connolly, essentially.
Yeah. She's got that Irish third eye thing, I think. You know, it's in her genes. This you can tell she's got, and she I think she had a feeling. She just had a feeling that we'd get on. And of course, there's that hilarious story that John's using in his stand-up, because it is so bizarre, because she gave him my number at a party and he belligerently put it in his phone.
Why belligerently?
Well, because he didn't want to be with anyone. He said, I'll make someone unhappy. So he put, as a joke, he was never going to ring me, but he put my number in his phone as my wife to annoy her, and then didn't. And then a year went by, and then we did meet and we got on. And so when we went to swap numbers, he gave me his number and I rang his phone and we were in his car. So it came up on Bluetooth on his dashboard, my wife. And I was so, I thought, this man's a psychopath. An absolute psychopath. I couldn't work it out. I was so, and I quickly, you know, jumped out the car and was like, what just happened? But how bizarre, yeah.
Or really meant, maybe. You and John do seem such an idea, so ideally suited. And you found each other. She helped you on your way.
Yeah, yeah. We got on very quick. I think we've had a share. We understood each other's sort of childhood. We'd had a similar childhood where, yeah, and the comedy, you know. But quite difficult being at different stages of a comedy career. That sometimes was quite hard.
In what way?
Well, he knew what was ahead for me, but I didn't necessarily know what was. And even just little things, like I'm very independent person, but I was earning zero and he was on good money, and that thing of like, wanting to go hard, you know, like, no, I don't want you to pay for, I want to pay, you know, but things like that. And just the amount you have to work to, when you see people doing well, you know, on TV, you can see how hard you have to work to be a big name on, and you know, it's just relentless, you know, it's hard, really hard. Edinburgh's hard, and touring is hard, and trying to be a funny presence on TV on a lot of things is really tough.
Sometimes those environments, particularly those panel shows like 8 out of 10 Cats, I think they're terrifying.
I think it's a craft. I've not done that many for that reason, really. But the ones I've done, I've never come off and thought, oh, I've smashed that. You know, but get me in a room with, you know, 800 people. I'm best with big, bizarrely, my material is really good in front of big audiences.
Interesting.
Because they're quite direct gags, you know.
Yeah.
I'm better like that. But, I mean, I enjoy writing, so I tried to, when I started looking like I was making a bit of a name for myself, I sort of stepped back and concentrated on writing. And my thing was that if I got offered a sitcom, I wanted to have learnt the craft of writing, and I couldn't do both. So that's why I did radio for 3 series. And before that, I just studied sitcom. I'm more wanting, you know, to be a writer, performer than a TV personality, if you know what I mean. And I know there's people who do both. I don't know how they do it, but I've sort of like, yeah, sometimes I need to just take myself off and write for a few months, you know.
I think you seem this sort of, you know, you're very warm and sunny natured.
Yeah.
Do you find writing lonely sometimes?
No, I love it. But
do you?
My mum, you know, obviously my mum's a writer, and
yeah,
she, and yeah, no, I absolutely, I love it, because I don't find it lonely. because you're in the heads of these characters, you know. And I mean, they come to life to me, but they become real people. And like when we finished To Hull and Back, and I've just done the one for Channel 4, that's going to be out in January.
Yes, I heard about that. That's so exciting, Lucy.
But it's like those people have died. It's like, I have a great sense of loss when you have to hand it over, because I like to stay with them, you know. And I feel like I've lost friends because I can't write them anymore. It's really weird.
Tell me about... I love at the beginning of the book, one of the things I really liked was that you talk about meeting John Richardson. And when you met John, it seems to me as though you were quite bold and forward in saying, look, do you want kids?
Yeah.
And I have such respect for that. And I think it's great that you talk about that in the book, because I think women need to do that more. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I just was totally ruled by my hormones. I'd met him and he had a semi-detached house in Surbiton, and he had a mortgage and a pension, and he was a good driver, and he'd never been in debt. And I was like, right, have a child with me then, because I'm like 30, what was I then? 36, 37 or something.
And what did you say?
I just said, I think we should have a child now.
What does he say?
Obviously he resisted for a while because we hadn't known each other long. And then he caved in after a while to pressure.
But
so we did everything. We got married, and he said, I work, and he said, well, I'm not going to have a child with you till we get married. And I said, I don't want to get married.
Why didn't you want to get married?
I just didn't, the whole idea of marriage, for me personally, I just think is, I think I thought that when you get married, it puts a pressure on the relationship, and the relationship might not be able to thrive as much. And the whole thing of like your dad handing you over, and like just and having to like that, it, like it's like a legal thing, like how I don't get how love and legal thing, like if you love someone you just stay with them, and if you fall out of love then you leave, and why all the idea of that, you know. But we both come from, you know, our parents were together, you know, so we find it weird now. We've realised that we don't have that much, you know, we almost bring our daughter up like we're both single, and we've had to realise and go, oh, right, no, we can do stuff together, even though our most sort of visceral experience is just with one parent at a time. Because my thing is wanting to take her away on my own, and he's the same.
Why don't we take a picture of Ray and Lucy on this? Because this looks very country-fied.
Yeah, it's
do you think he'll fall off, Lucy? Would you hold him so he doesn't fall off?
Have you ever wanted to put him on your head and pretend that it's a wig? Have you ever put him on your head? I'm just worried that if I got, after a couple of Proseccos, I would be putting him on my head. You know, so like his fur look like my fringe. I suit a brunette, you see. I would be so tempted to... You're gorgeous, aren't you? That's such a calming influence, doesn't it? Mm. Does he make you feel calm when you're with him?
He is the only thing. He's made me probably about 50% less neurotic.
Wow. Oh, he's listening.
Tell me why you decided to write the book.
I'd wrote a story about a woman who has an invisible frog in her pocket and wanted it to be a pocketbook. So my agent got in touch with a publisher and he sort of said, I don't really think... And he said, is it a children's book? I said, no, it's a pocketbook, and it'll be rude. And I said, I want to sell it in WH Smith's. And he said, it's not going to work. You've just gone a bit. It's just because you're in lockdown. And he said, but if you want to write a book, an actual proper book, I'd be interested in that. And I thought, well, the last show I did was about parenting, and I thought that I could do a funny parenting book. Yeah. And I thought, gosh, I clever and canny. No one else.
Are we going this way?
Straight up, yeah. No one else has thought about writing a book in lockdown. I'll be the only one to use this time wisely because nothing else is happening. And then, of course, everyone's wrote a book.
Yeah.
But as I got into it, because I'd kept a diary, so I used a lot of the diary entries. And then as I started writing, I was like, I don't just want to be funny all the time. I want to just be totally honest.
Yeah.
Because when I started looking back into the birth and stuff, and yeah, I just wanted to be honest. And I wrote it, you know, I already had a lot of diary entries, and I wrote the book on a night, and it's got a flow to it where it's all down to, I know men hate discussing stuff, talking about stuff like this, but it's all linked to my cycle, and I just, however I was feeling, I let that set the tone of the book. So when I read it back, I could see there were some funny bits and then some bits where I was angry or sad or melancholy or... But I really enjoyed the process of it. I couldn't work out if it was just for people who were having children or had had children, or but I wanted to very much keep it about parenting, just because I've just found it so hard and wonderful and funny and testing, and you know, I just think there is still room for women discussing how they feel, really. So
and it's also your experience, and I think, I don't know, like back in the day, you'd get men, let's say Clive James or whatever, would just say, oh, my essay's on life. And there wouldn't be no explanation for why he was writing those. It was like, this is what I think about things.
Mm.
Whereas it's sort of like, I really like that women are saying, well, this is what I think about things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The more, it's like, that's your experience. And, you know, for a long time, there was that attitude of, oh, women, they talk about periods in stand-up, or that terrible old cliche that they... And you sort of think, well, yeah, but that's what happens to them.
Yeah.
So men might talk about stuff that happens to them. That's all right. We'll all talk about things that happen to us.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the climate has just changed massively. Like, but I think for me, particularly Sarah Millican and Catherine Ryan, because when they were becoming big and getting through on TV and stuff, I was still gigging. And I actually saw... gigs being able to be easier because they've gone, well, she's consistently funny, and she is, and there, and so let's give females a chance. They did a lot, they really did. I remember emailing Sarah and saying, like, oh, how bad a gig had gone and what once, and you know how sexist it was, and she was really good. She didn't let me sort of wallow in it. She said, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, gig can go badly, and don't let sort of external things, you know, she's like, you know, learn from it what you can do better and move on. But oh yeah, there's just too many to say. But totally, the one that affected me the most was I did the Leicester Mercury competition, the new act competition. Ramesh won that year, and then I won't name who it was, but a reviewer, like a well-known comedy reviewer, reviewed all the acts, and they were all men apart from me. And all the other men, he said how funny they were, what type of comedian they were, like gave you a flavour of them. And with me, he only discussed how I looked. And I was so annoyed. I was so, like, it really... I've had so many bad experiences, but there was something about that one that just pushed it. But as I say, it's a different world. It's just, things are different now. It's not like it was. You know, back then, when I did that tour, I would go on BBC, you know, like a regional radio, BBC radio, like, you know, somewhere in the country, and Leicester or somewhere, and the first thing that the interviewer would say was, "Do you think women are as funny as men?" But and it was like, "Oh, come on, mate! I've got to go and do a gig in an hour for 300 people. Don't put that in my head."
Oh, look, Lucy, I'm going to have to pick him up.
Oh, of course.
Do you think this would annoy John, and does it annoy you?
Yeah, because it annoys him when I dawdle.
So this does it? Do you dawdle?
Yeah. I just forget things and...
Do you?
Yeah. I need to write stuff on my phone and I'm late and I can't find my cash card. And
so am I.
It's just like, something about keys, cash card and phone charger, just... I just know that I'm not going to change because I can't, you know. And like I can say what I'm good at, you know, like I can keep the kitchen clean and the living room, but I have a problem with hanging clothes. I can't, like, and it get, and I, it's not like I like it like that. I hate it, but I can't. It's almost like if I was to do it, I worry that I would maybe die because then everything would be done. Do you know what I mean? Of like, well, what would be the point? If you had everything organised, then why would you carry on needing to live? Like, I can't, there's some sort of thing in my brain that I think I create it, and I don't know why. But mostly, it's just, I'm in a rush, and I'm thinking about something else. I think that's what it is. Kylie Minogue says she's got a phobia, and I think that's a really clever way, since she's got a phobia of coat hangers. I think, why didn't I think of that, because that's a really clever way of saying I don't want to put my own clothes away.
You said, I want to talk about Meet the Richardsons, which is the show that you do with John Richardson, your husband, and it's so brilliant, Lucy, and obviously it's much loved and much celebrated, and it's, well, you, how would you describe it?
Oh yeah, I mean it's been just a joy. We did a programme called Married to a Celebrity on Channel 4, and it was the first time we'd done stuff together, and it was just felt so natural, and I think it's the most at ease I've been on TV, you know, and it was just, you know, it was fun because it was just airing our dirty laundry on TV, and because we're comedians and we sort of have funny banter at home all day, it was just like second nature, you know. Without being funny, we could just sit and talk and just, you know, it'd be fairly comical. We don't really have to do any planning for it, which is great for us, you know, that we can just turn up and stuff will come out of our mouths. That'll be funny. And so Lee Hupfield really is fabulous. Lee, he's like us. He could be related to me. He's, you know, Birmingham, really working class family, but he's just been in TV for years. He thought it would make a good, like a fly on the wall sort of, you know, pretend documentary. But it's a family sitcom. And I think at the beginning we sort of publicised it as a documentary, and I don't think we need to. I think we can just be honest and say it's a sitcom.
A lot of the incidents, you know, you can tell it's stuff that's happened that's loosely based on incidents in your real life that, you know, like the cans in the lager cans that you were picking up for the, you know, just to be a good citizen, and you put in your pram.
Yeah.
And then later you're with a friend you were desperately trying to impress. And you saw the cans.
Yeah. That really happened. I died. Because that was the same mum that a couple of days before an olive had fallen out my dress, and I should have just explained to her that my daughter had, I thought she'd ate it, but she'd put it in my bra.
Oh, Lucy, isn't this pretty here?
Oh, I know.
Oh, look at this.
Lovely, isn't it?
So this is a local sort of village?
This is the village hub, the hub of the village, yeah.
You said that you're quite confrontational.
It's because I'm from Hull. I'm really, really Hull. And I don't realise till I meet people who aren't from Hull and I am warm-hearted and confrontational. And that is what people from Hull are like. We're lovely, but we're like, oh, come here, give us a hug. You know, it's like, And I've been brought up very Hull, you know, where you say what you feel and you get your feelings out and you have a row and then it's all better.
I think you'd be a good friend, Lucy.
Oh, I am a good friend, yeah. I mean, because of this type of bloody career I've got, I miss out on a lot of things, you know.
Yeah.
But my friends are really good about it. I'm very protective over. I'm protective of everyone. I feel like I've got killer instincts. I've always been very good, you know. If there's been a fight or someone's like needs help, I don't seem to understand that I'm a 5'1" woman. When I get the adrenaline, I feel like I could kill somebody. I don't have any. I've worked in so many rough nightclubs and stuff where you've had to be a bit, you know, you've had to be able to look after yourself a bit. So you've
done a lot of sort of, like, you know, proper jobs, really, I call them, you know, like,
yeah,
as you said, low-paid service jobs. And, you know, I find it's the thing that I think prepared me for life more than any other thing, any other job, was working in those jobs, because it taught me, I had resilience, I sort of had a work ethic. It was like, we've just got to get on and do it.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally know what you mean. Yeah, I started, I was about 13 or 14, I was a Saturday girl at my uncle's hairdressing salon, and he paid me £1 an hour, and then I used to spend it all on makeup at his shop, and he used to have to give me my bus fare.
And you worked in Asda?
Went to Asda on cooked chickens, yeah, when all my mates were 50 divorcee women on HRT. I used to go clubbing with them. They used to look after me. It was like being in a sitcom. Because I was like, and it happened when I was a cleaner as well. I was cleaning with women, and it was the same sort of thing. It's like working on, it's the equivalent of working on a building site with men, that they decide who you are and that will never change. Do you know what I mean? And I was like the idiot.
Yeah, it's like your Spice Girl persona.
Yeah.
You were like Idiot Spice.
Yeah, well, they had to look after. Because when I was cleaning, I went early and cleaned all these plants on this balcony, and they weren't real, they were plastic. And so after that, she wouldn't give me a tea or coffee. We used to have a tea break, and she brought warm Ribena in for me. And I never could say, can't I have tea and coffee like all the other people? She decided that I was a child, basically. I couldn't have a warm drink, could only have warm Ribena.
Tell me, I think I can tell, having seen you and John together, you can just tell that you're so suited, aren't you?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I mean, we really argue. I think we're sort of not worried, you know. We're well suited, and you know, there's no, yeah, I think we think we'll grow old together, but we do argue. But I don't think that's a bad thing sometimes. My granny always used to say, you know, you need to argue, because if you don't, mean it's one person keeping the mouth shut, and that's not good.
So. And out of, obviously, parenting, again, you talk about this a lot in your book, but I get the sense that John is your good cop, he's bad cop a bit more. Like, he's a bit more of the disciplinarian.
Yeah, he's a really good parent. He's better than me. It's just hard, because he's better than me at most things. But you do get used to it. But yeah, he's really, really good. He's maybe almost too. They're best mates. He wants to play with Elsie. He doesn't want anyone else to play with her. He doesn't want her to have friends. He's gonna be heartbroken when she. But and he knows I'm right. I'm more like, let her go and play. You know, if she has friends round, he's there. And I'm like, you'll know if they need you, because they'll cry. Sit then, here, you know.
Maybe that's good, because they say you should give kids roots and wings.
Yeah.
So he's giving her the roots, and you're trying to strap some wings on a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Because she just all she wants to do is just play with her dad, which is fine now. But when she's 15, we need that to stop.
And with arguments, who's the first one to say I'm sorry generally? Do you say I'm sorry?
I used to, always, because I'm the only one who does anything wrong. This is what we'll go to, I think we will go and have therapy about. I think we're at that stage. It's 7 years, so. Because he doesn't apologise for anything. And he doesn't, he can't ever say, he doesn't want to say that he's done something wrong. And his thing is, well, I don't do anything wrong. And then I'm hoping a therapist will go, because obviously I want to see a female therapist. And I want to see if he's a therapist that already decides that she likes. Is there a way you can win him over when you go to couples therapy? I mean, I'm really worried about whatever, because I want her to instantly go, I'm on your side.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's a competition with us.
Ray, this is so. Lucy, I've loved our walk today. What lovely company you are. What a lovely woman you are.
Oh, thank you.
I really like you.
Oh, thanks. I really like you. Oh, yeah. If you ever want to meet in Highgate.
I feel a bit shy. Like, you know, when you're in the playground. And I really think Lucy's book is so brilliant, incidentally. And I really recommend you read it yourself just because it's funny and entertaining and brilliant. And buy it for a friend. It's perfect. It's called Drinking Custard by Lucy Beaumont. And we should say the whole thing. You say the whole thing, Lucy. It's called?
Drinking Custard, Diary of a Confused Mum. Or is it Tired Mum?
And what's your view on Ray? We've had our walk with Ray now. And I've taken him out. So I think Elsie probably wants a dog. You seem keen. John seems like he could be persuaded.
Well, we'll share Raymond with you if you want. This could be his northern retreat.
Oh, I'd love it. Will you get one now?
Yeah, totally. We want to go to Disney. We've promised we'd take her to Disney World. So after that, I want a dog.
Well, Raymond's really enjoyed it. Raymond, will you say goodbye to Lucy?
Bye.
Hello, darling. It was lovely to meet you. Aww. He's gorgeous, isn't he? It was very lovely to meet you, Raymond.
Bye, Lucy.
That is how he'd speak as well, isn't it? That is his voice.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.